Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, February 18th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, new and improved, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com.
That's mypetchicken.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We've got a great show lined up for you today. It is Monday, which means we've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. He will be joining us today, kind of giving us an overview about Merrick's disease. We've covered Merrick's in huge detail in a previous episode. Just go back and take a look at our archives that will be labeled. It'll probably be a Monday show. And if not, you should be able to find it. Speaking of that, this is episode 777. So lucky episode today, 777. Yep, it's hard to believe. We've broadcast more than 777 episodes. Some have been deleted due to bad connectivity, or they just had a lot of static to them, or they just weren't a great show, or we were on the road. And anyway, so but as far as the numbers are adding up, this is officially episode 777, and it is our fifth year of broadcasting. But we've got a great show lined up for you today with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. This week's schedule, I normally try to kind of cover that with you. It's going to be, off and on, because, you know, we've got the tour coming up towards the end of the week. So it looks like maybe Wednesday, this Wednesday, Garden Wise Living with Arlena, this coming Wednesday the 20th. And then, let's see, we've got this Thursday the 21st, poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. That's this Thursday. There will be no show this Friday. I will be on the road heading to my first event, which is Friday night. We'll talk about that here in just a second. And I've got an email over to Peter Brown. I was calling and or emailing him to see if he could come on and talk about bird flu, the different strains of bird flu, the bird flu that's never been here in America as far as the strain that affects people versus the other bird flu that were, I think, about a half a million birds right now have been killed in Mexico on purpose due to this when they found it. So we'll see based on his schedule. We may have Peter on actually tomorrow as well, which will give us a pretty full week. Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor today, possibly tomorrow. Wednesday, Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Thursday, Poultry Today with Dr. McRae, PhD. So that'll be this week's lineup. No show Friday, but there will be a show Saturday as we're on the road. I'll talk about the tour in just a second. So there will not be a show this Friday, the 22nd, but there will be a show, a special Saturday morning show. This Saturday, the 23rd of February, we'll be broadcasting live on the road at the Bruton, Alabama Tractor Supply. It'll be a 10 a.m. Saturday show, this Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So hopefully you can tune in for that special Saturday morning show that we do on occasion when we are on the road. Speaking of being on the road, let me go ahead and give you the dates if you're a first-time listener or didn't know about the 2013 Chicken Whisperer Power to the Poultry Tour that we've got going on. This will be our first quarter tour. We're doing a tour every quarter for Tractor Supply, plus other events outside of our sponsor Tractor Supply as well, where you can come out and learn about backyard poultry. But this first quarter tour with Tractor Supply is going to start this Friday. This Friday, February 22nd, we will be in Enterprise, Alabama, at the Tractor Supply there in Enterprise, Alabama. That event is scheduled to be from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. this Friday. This coming Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in Bruton, Alabama, at the Bruton, Alabama Tractor Supply Store, and we'll be, of course, broadcasting live from that event. Sunday, Pensacola, Florida. Oh, yeah. There at Sunday, 2 to 5 p.m. 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Pensacola, Florida, Tractor Supply Store. Monday the 25th, we'll be in Crestview, Florida, Tractor Supply Store. That'll be from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then Tuesday the 26th, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Marianna, Florida, Tractor Supply Store. So that'll be coming up Tuesday the 26th. If you live in the area, we hope you can attend one of those shows. Basically, they're going to include a poultry workshop. There'll be about 2-hour poultry workshop, getting started with backyard chickens. And, of course, I think all the Tractor Supplies will be at have their baby chicks in stock. So we'll be basically talking about how to get started this spring with your new backyard flock. So we're definitely looking forward to meeting a lot of folks and doing that. Now, the issue is, you may have seen this on Facebook over the weekend, and I was telling Jen, I said, you know, and some people were saying the same thing, you know, it's kind of hard to get mad at this, yet I'm very disappointed right now, kind of in my publisher and their schedule. But the issue is that, and I guess this is the, I posted on Facebook actually, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good is that Tractor Supply, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million, my publisher, the two biggest and largest wholesale book distributors in America, they're all out of my books. They're on back order, and they have been for some time now, last few weeks anyway, at least for the month of February, maybe towards the end of January. Totally out. And so though we were going to have this actually as a book tour as well, we were going to spend about an hour doing book signings and then an hour and a half doing the workshop and then Q&A and things like that. There are no books anywhere in the country to be found. Now, the ones that are already on the shelves are there, but nobody has any beyond that in warehouse or anything like that. And so, yeah, I even called, like I said, the two largest book distributors that distribute to all these bookstores. I called Barnes & Noble this morning. I called Books A Million this morning to see if I could get some stock from them. Totally out, on back order, other than what's on the shelf. Tractor Supply, my publisher, said Tractor Supply had ordered 9,000. Tractor Supply doesn't have a single book other than the one or two that are on the shelves in the store. 9,000 gone. I talked to Barnes & Noble today. I went to their website, Barnes & Noble. I wanted to order 100 books. And then I said, okay, well, it says they have it. Let me go ahead and reduce that to maybe 50 and see what happens if it changes. And in the shopping cart said that they were available, but I called them. And I said, hey, explain them to the situation. And I was like, hey, you know, this is the deal. I want to see if you have these books in stock or you would just sell them to me and then send me an email that says, I'm sorry, these are out of stock. And she said, Barnes & Noble, nationwide, they claimed they had 20 books in their warehouse. But then she came back on and she says, well, actually it's showing now that they are on back order and we don't have any. We can take a chance and I can get you this 20. And I'm like, no, thank you. And then she said, it must be a very popular book because I see that a lot are on back order at our warehouses. And I said, well, just give me an idea. Does it show how many people have ordered the book so far? How many have ordered and are waiting or on this back order? And she just started listing. She's like, well, let's see. We've got 26 here, 56 here, 13 there, 25 there. So I was like, my jaw dropped. These are people that have actually are waiting for the book to get shipped to their store. So again, it's kind of the good, the bad, the ugly. The good is there are no books in the country. The bad is there's no books anywhere in the country. And the ugly is that we're basically no books to sign on this tour that we're doing. But it's not that big of a deal, you know. Hey, we'll just eliminate that portion of the event. That just means I get to yap about chickens even more. Answer more questions, talk to people, meet and greet, and actually extend the length of the poultry workshop to about 2 hours instead of an hour and a half. So it's just one of those things, which is absolutely crazy. I did send an email of disappointment to my publisher this morning. Of course, they're off today for the holiday, but I did send them an email and just sharing my disappointment that, you know, here it is. Basically, chick days all over the country starts in February and runs through really after Easter, maybe through April, maybe the half of May. And here it is. We're beginning to, you know, people are scheduling their Chick Days events. People are out there getting their chicks. They're buying books with their chicks. And you're telling me that even the publisher is completely out of the books. The publisher has zero books, zero, unless they can all of a sudden pull some out of their hat for the tour. But when I called the publisher directly again on Friday, of course, that was the first folks I talked to. They transferred me to the warehouse, zero books. And so they said they have 5,000 coming in around March 5th. And so in my email this morning to them, I said, you know, you told me they got 5,000 coming in. From everybody I've talked to across the country, all these major booksellers, Lowe's, who carries it, Home Depot, who carries it, Amazon, everybody. I've talked to everybody to see if they had any stock, and all on back order. I told my publisher, I said, 5,000 isn't even going to cover the amount of books that I've, just to the people I've talked to from between Friday and throughout this morning, covering what they want. So I think you better order some more and in a hurry. So we'll see if they can't come up with some books somewhere. It's one of those issues. So again, the good, the bad, and the ugly. As I told Jenny, it's kind of hard to complain about that they're all sold out and people are trying to get them and they're on hold and they're on back order and people have already ordered them and they're waiting on them. But at the same time, no books. I told my publisher in the email, I said, well, I guess I'm going to rename my tour the No Book Tour instead of the book tour. So they probably won't be very happy with me, but hey, I'm not really happy with them right now. So maybe I'll get some type of excuse from them of why there's no books here in the middle of Chick Days all across this great land. So it's one of those things. Hopefully you can come out, if you live in the area, to one of the Tractor Supplies and say hello. I'd love to meet you. I'd love to see you and talk chicken. That's what it's all about here. With Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So maybe I'll see you. Also, two dates you may want to put on your calendar for April. Remember, no travel in March. I have no tours in March. That is by design because I've got a daughter on the way. Should be here. A due date is around March 22nd. And no traveling in March at all. In church yesterday, it was quite funny. Jen kind of raised her hand that we were saying, you know, any prayer request. And Jen was like, hey, we're going to be on the road again, and just keep us in your prayers as we travel. And then I immediately kind of raised my hand and spoke up. And I said, yeah, and it's kind of close to her due date as well. So I've gone ahead and packed a tarp and some old shop rags in the camper just in case. Just in case Lily decides to come a little early. Well, you know, Caleb came 3 weeks early. So it's one of those things where, so we're cutting it kind of close. This tour will be about 3 weeks out from her due date. So you never know. Hey, there's hospitals all over the place, so we'll just do what we can. But she's right now, I've banned her from really any type of lifting or straining or anything like that. I will be loading the camper. I will be setting up at the events. I will be. So it's just one of those things. We want to make sure that Lily keeps on incubating until it's time for her to be hatched out. So one of those things. Hey, we're right smack dab in the middle of an awesome chicken coop contest. Hopefully you've entered. If you haven't entered, guess what? You're guaranteed not to win. I guarantee you that right now. If you have entered, then I guarantee you have a chance to win. We started this coop back on Friday, February the 1st. We talked about it here on the radio show. We started the contest back on Friday, February 1st, and actually the very last second to enter is Wednesday, February 27th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, we will be giving away this awesome chicken coop and a chicken fountain watering system, both on Thursday, February 28th, the last day of February. Live here on the radio show. You do not have to be listening live to win. If you win, we will contact you via phone, via email. And, of course, we'll post the winner's information on our Facebook and Twitter pages. But we will try to call you live on the radio show Thursday, February 28th, to let you know that you have won this awesome prize package. It is a four-square chicken coop from MyPetChicken.com, valued at about $550. And, of course, a chicken fountain watering system from chickenfountain.com. And so a great prize package there for you. Let me tell you actually how to enter this contest. No, you don't have to like a blog. You don't have to like a Facebook page. You certainly don't have to leave any comments. All you have to do is send me an email to enter. Your email is your entry. How simple is that? So let me give you this information. You're to enter this awesome chicken coop contest, you want to send an email to contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay? Once again, that's contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay? Now, when you do that, in the subject line of the email, you need to put coop contest. Pretty simple, right? Coop contest should go in the subject line of your email. Inside the email, in the email itself, you need to put your name, your shipping address, and your phone number. Phone number because I got to call you. I'm going to try to call you live on the radio show. If not, I can follow up and call you later and let you know you win. Email address, so of course, or I'll have your email address because you've entered. And then your shipping address because I need to know where to ship the coop. So awesome, awesome, awesome contest. For the month of February, we give away more prizes, chicken-related prizes, and more chicken coops than anybody on this planet. Should call Guinness Book of World Records. We've given away so many chicken coops. Time is running out. You have until Wednesday, February 27th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to send me that email. One entry per household, okay? One entry per household. So if you and your husband and four kids live in the same house, one entry. If grandma lives next door, she can enter. Even though she doesn't want chickens, she can enter for you. If you have a cousin that lives in New York, you live in California, your cousin in New York doesn't care about chickens, she can enter, and then I can ship the coop to you. But one entry per household, please. More entries will get you disqualified. Okay. So we got that great, awesome chicken coop contest that's going on right this second. Oh, yeah, two more events I was talking about that are coming up in April you may want to mark your calendar for. One is if you can go, you'll be so happy and you'll have so much fun. Your family is a family affair. The Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival coming up on the 13th and 14th of April. It really kind of starts that Friday night, the 12th, to be honest with you. Friday night, the 12th, Saturday, the 13th, and Sunday, the 14th of April, the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. Just Google it. You'll be able to find all the information about it. Ready for this? Over 15 bands. Whether you like bluegrass or rock or country rock or heavy metal, whatever. 15 bands on three different stages throughout this event. How cool is that? An American Bantam Association, American Poultry Association, ABA, APA sanctioned poultry show will be there. Okay, how cool is that? You can enter your show chickens if you choose to. There's going to be a kind of a folk art area where they're going to be doing ironworks and woodwork and knitting and crafting and all kinds of stuff. In fact, there's a whole area where you can buy great homemade goodies from carved bears out of big wooden stumps to, crafts and all kinds of homemade goodies there. And that's kind of the section that we were in last year, and we've been invited back. And so it is an awesome event. All kinds of food vendors, food trucks galore, fried butter, I think they have, the big turkey wings, turkey legs, rather, funnel cakes, fried Oreos, chicken on a stick, cotton candy, all that great fun stuff. Bingo, they've got some rides for the kids. It's going to be really awesome. And then, of course, I'll be doing, I think, all day on Saturday and Sunday. I think it's four times each day. I'll have 30-minute segments of different topics. So Saturday's topics, you look at your program. I'll be under the big tent there with the tractor supply sign. And a couple of sets of bleachers in there like there were last year. And, for example, Saturday I'll be talking about maybe incubation, brooding, coops, and maybe feed. Sunday I'll be talking about some other issues probably. So four 30-minute segments each day. And, nope, I don't think there'll be any selling of any animals there or swaps or anything. There may be, a sale area at the poultry show, Dragonfly, so one of those things. But, yeah, Thompson, 4514 in the chat room. Sounds like your kind of party. It's going to be awesome. And it's going to be fun, fun, fun at the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. So check your Google and check it out, and we'd love to see you there. 25,000 people, over 25,000 people attend this event, so it is absolutely fabulous. It's in Moulton, Alabama, which is on the north side. It's kind of like north center Alabama, I guess. One week after that, we'll be down in Mobile, way down there in L.A., lower Alabama. The Mobile Book Club has invited me down there, and you can sign up for that too. It includes lunch. I think it's $28 per person. I know seating is very limited. Last time I talked to them, so they said if you promote this, please let them know that seating is limited. $28 a person includes lunch. For that, I think 10 to 3 event, and it does include lunch. And we'll be talking all about backyard poultry there as well. That's in Mobile on the 20th, I believe it is, of April. Hang on a minute. Yeah, there we go. 2013, April. Yeah, April 20th. So there's some events that you can come out to and learn all about backyard poultry. Alrighty, very, very cool. It is now time for our special guest segment with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. And of course, today's topic, we're talking all about Merrick's disease. So it's time for our special guest segment. Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com. Alrighty, let's bring them online. Brown, also known as Dr. Peter. Welcome.
Hey, Andy.
Hey. Ian?
Can't hear you.
You there? Hello?
I'm here, but I can't hear you.
Okay, let me go. Alrighty, let me see. Let me get in the chat room here. Sound check. See what they can hear. Let me go ahead and fix something on my end real quick. Be back dead air for maybe 5 seconds, maybe 10 seconds. Be back in a minute. All right, let me go ahead and get a sound check in the chat room. We fixed maybe a little issue here, so sound check. There's about a 20-second delay in the sound check, so let me check my sound first, and we'll go over and bring Peter on here in just a second. Sound check in the chat room. Sounded fine until I tried to talk to the doc. Okay, very good. They hear me. Joni's saying, yep, we hear you fine. Let me get over here to the switchboard, and let's go ahead and try to bring on Peter. How about now, Peter?
It's much better.
All right. I knew I could fix the problem. Yippee!
Funny part is I could hear you until you brought me on. I could hear you just like I can now, but as soon as you brought me on, it was like everything went away. You were so far away, it was
weird.
Just hearing you very faintly. So, you got it fixed. That's the main thing.
That's the main thing. We are here, and we're ready to learn about Merrick's disease, and hope you had a great weekend this past weekend with family and friends. Great.
I did, yep.
Always good to hear. All right, we've got our Chicken Whisper notebooks ready, folks. If you're a first-time listener, Monday through Thursday is all about education. Friday is laid-back fun day. And so if you haven't already learned, a spiral notebook with the big CW written on the front. Take lots of great notes to learn more about your backyard chickens. Right here on the show. So Merrick's disease, my friend, we're all ready.
All right. Obviously, the reason for, you know, one of the reasons for bringing this up again now is with hatching season coming, I've been getting a lot of questions from folks about Merrick's. You know, a lot of misinformation out there about how it works, what it does. Hopefully today, again, we'll try to put some of those things to sleep, and hopefully people will put out the proper word. in relation, to the disease itself, what it all involves, and what the vaccine will do and won't do, and how to vaccinate and how to handle a vaccine. Because one of the things we find out is that the proper handling of the vaccine is critical. And I find a lot of folks either don't read the directions, or whoever they bought the product from or wherever they got it from, whether it be from a friend or a vendor, didn't get all of the directions and things of that nature. When we buy these things, they come in packages of 10, and they're not necessarily meant for breaking down into single vial containers. Technically, it is a technical violation of the law to do so, but there's no other way to do it. In other words, if a person wanted to vaccinate for Merix, they might be forced to buy 10 bottles when they only want one.
Mm-hmm.
So we take the current vaccination directions that come with the vaccine and just duplicate that, and it goes out with every bottle of vaccine. I often get questions, too, as to whether or not the vaccine comes with the diluent that is required. Anybody that would sell you just the vaccine without the diluent just wasting everybody's time and hard-earned money, because the diluent that comes with the vaccine is an extremely nutrient-rich material that is required for the vaccine to live after you reconstitute it from a freeze-dried state into a liquid. So you can't use sterile water, you can't use water out of the tap, you can't use any of these things to reconstitute it. And let me back up and qualify that you can use anything you want, but to have the vaccine be viable after you've reconstituted it into a liquid, you must use the diluent that comes with it, okay? So I want to clear that stuff up right away. The Merix virus, as far as the scientific community is concerned, has been around for a little over 100 years. It's still with us today. It still haunts us today. It's ever-changing. And by that I mean that the immunity to the original HVT vaccine, and actually the one that is available to most people either in the fancy or in the backyard poultry sector, that's where the highest degree of resistance to this vaccine is, the HVT type of vaccine, which is a herpes virus turkey, basically is what it is. So what I mean by resistance is that over the years the virus has changed. I want to explain that just a little bit, because I get questions about this all the time. So I'm going to try to make sense of this to you.
Okay.
If you were to take five balloons, small balloons, and put one balloon in the center and put four balloons around the outside, and then just for argument's sake, put them in a tub of water and then pull them all down, but let the one in the middle stay above the others. Okay, they all got to be touching each other, so to speak, but you've got five balloons, each representing a Merix virus, or a Merix virus particle, so to speak. The one in the middle is the dominant one. That's the one that the vaccine that you're using is going to be taking care of. The others are subordinate, and they will just fall in line and be taken care of. As you take care of that dominant virus, this is, whether it be bacteria or whether it be virus, and I don't want to confuse the two, but I want to point that out, it is a fight for survival. Just like humans, we fight for survival in many ways every day. We just don't think of it that way, okay? And but they're fighting for survival every day, and the vaccine saying, oh, no, you don't. I'm going to control you, and I'm going to keep your head down, and I'm going to keep pushing you down until I get you under that water. And as we do that, and this is not quite as well as some virologists might explain it, but this gives you a good idea of how this all works. And this is the same thing for human viruses, such as the AIDS virus. We know that the AIDS virus is not the same virus it was 20, 30 years ago when it was first brought to the limelight. And neither is the Marek's virus. This has changed dramatically with the advent of the vaccine being around the early 1970, 69, 70, 71, right in that range. So it has changed dramatically itself. But anyway, going back, so we have a fight for survival of that virus, but the vaccine is doing such a good job, it keeps pushing it down, and as it pushes it down, it is no longer the dominant virus, but one of those other four that are surrounding it pops up and is now the virus that is dominant, but it is not an exact copy of the virus that was dominant before. I don't know if I'm making sense to you. It makes sense to me. Okay. So now we have a virus that is similar to, but not exactly the same as the previous virus that the vaccine was holding down. Now it may hold this other vaccine somewhat in check for a while. Okay. Until changes occur there. And first thing you know, the vaccine is not anywhere near as valuable and efficacious as it was before. And that's how it works. And the bacteria work the same way. Antibiotics are meant to kill them off. If you don't kill them all, which in most cases is fairly rare that you would kill every one of them off, the ones that do survive and hang around have changed. And they will recognize that bacteria, maybe not, you know, that antibiotic, maybe not the first time or the second or the third time, but eventually they will recognize it and have made enough changes that antibiotic is no longer of value. A lot of this stuff started, you know, we talk about it all the time, about the bacterial problems with antibiotics and everything else. A lot of this stuff started when we allowed people to start living on the street, okay? Back when I was a kid, a lot of folks who had mental problems were housed in mental institutions. Most of them dropped off there by their families, but I'm not even going to get into that issue. But then along came the government, said we don't have the money to do this anymore, and some were put into private homes that took them in, and others were just deemed okay to be out on the street and on their own. And so at any rate, they are, to a degree, some of the homeless anyway, are responsible for the problems we have with tuberculosis in relation to antibiotic resistance, because they get ill, they go to a clinic, they get medication, and they go to the clinic until they feel well enough to not go back again, although they're not cured, and the problem starts all over again with this antibiotic-resistant thing. Then they get sick, and then they come back and get more medication, they go back, and this thing goes back and forth. And we are in deep trouble right now all over this country and spreading all around the world now with tuberculosis being resistant to just about everything out there. So kind of viruses work in the same way when we are trying to vaccinate for them or trying to protect ourselves against them, whether it be chickens, whether it be humans. On the human side, again, you look at the flu virus. We try to decide what one is going to be the dominant one. We hope we get it right. We look at things historically there. They use a lot of historical data to look at that to make the mix right. And sometimes they hit it and sometimes they don't. And the timing of vaccination is, especially with the flu vaccine, this is something that I haven't heard anybody really talk about out there. But a lot of the failures of, so to speak, of the flu vaccine may not necessarily be coming from the wrong mix of the viruses that are in the vaccine, but it may be the timing of when you got the vaccination and your exposure to the virus, you see. Because most of the vaccine that's being put out now, unless you're getting the flu virus, okay, and the live one in the nostril, the one that you're getting injected into your arm is a killed vaccine.
Right.
It can't give you the flu. You might be allergic to something else that's in it that might make you somewhat sick or have some sort of a reaction. There's usually always pain at the injection site with any killed vaccine, whether you're allergic to something or not. Okay? That's the nature of the beast. It's designed to aggravate tissue at that injection site and make your immune system respond. That process can take every bit of 2 weeks, you see, before you will have enough antibodies circulating to hopefully protect you against that. Then you come along, you're 5 days into after vaccination, and you come in contact with somebody that's got a full-blown case of the flu, and you go, well, that's no big deal. I was vaccinated. Well, you might have been vaccinated, but you probably only got about 40% chance of any kind of protection, you see. Maybe 50% at the best. So that's why a lot of things fail. So let's turn over here now to Merrick's vaccine, and we'll talk more in depth about this whole thing. Dr. Merrick, who it's named after, was a Hungarian researcher who dealt with the disease back as far back as 1907. And so from that it derives its name, Merrick's vaccine. It's kind of like a misnomer, because the vaccine is not made from an actual Merrick's virus, okay? I said earlier it was a turkey herpes virus, and that's just what it is. And this is a phenomenon that happens with this particular virus, that the turkeys that have this turkey herpes virus are not bothered by the disease itself. It causes no disease whatsoever in turkeys, but the virus has the ability to protect against the Merrick's virus, and that is huge. Now, let me dispel another rumor that flies around out here all the time. The Merrick's vaccine was developed for the commercial poultry industry, because prior to the early 1970s, when it became available, it was causing a lot of condemnations of birds as far as the broilers were concerned, but it was also causing havoc in the layer industry with birds going lame and out of production and so on. So the costs were high. Mortality, morbidity. Morbidity is the birds that are still living but not producing anything and probably going to be the next day or the next week's mortality. But at any rate, this is what happened with this. It has the ability to protect against it, but people don't understand that it is not a Merrick's virus that you're using. Because I have over the years talked with many people, you know, who have called and said, you know, I didn't have Merrick's until I vaccinated. Well, you know, unless it was something where the birds happened to be exposed. The vaccine is not capable of giving them the disease. And even birds, here's where I think most of this stuff comes in, and I can't prove any of it from this standpoint. If you vaccinate your birds for Merrick's disease and they are exposed to the Merrick's virus, they could become carriers from that, because it doesn't stop infection, the vaccine. It stops the symptoms. And that's something I don't think that people can wrap their head around at all. And I think that's where part of this problem comes from. The other one is improper vaccination, wrong dose, splitting the vaccine, which I'm not a big fan of, but I have directions that I've made up of my own so that you can do it as properly as you could. It's a single dose vial, meaning there's 1,000 doses in the bottle. You're supposed to mix it, use it, and discard it after 1 hour use. Many, many people don't do that. I've known people that have called me and they vaccinated all day long with the same bottle. Well, after the first hour, it was a futile attempt to do anything after that, just a waste of time. So those are some of the things in the beginning here I wanted to get out. These are some of the problems that are out there, misnomer things that have rumors that have gone around and around and around and go through the rumor mill, and you know, it isn't it's a counterproductive thing. People need to realize if you're going to use the vaccine, if your birds aren't worth $20 to you, maybe you ought to reevaluate where you are, because splitting. Here's the thing: if you're splitting a virus that is freeze-dried, how do we know that the little freeze-dried wafer, after you've cut it into quarters — I know people that cut it into eighths, and I'm glad their eyesight is better than mine — but after you cut this up, this vaccine is given on what we call a dose, a PFU dose. they want each bird to have X amount of PFUs. PFUs are plaque-forming units. These are actual virus particles that would produce some protection. And so that's how they count them, okay? And when you take this vaccine and you, before you reconstitute it to a liquid, you cut the little dried wafer up, how do you know that one section isn't loaded with the PFUs, okay, and the other side not? Kind of like, you know, leaving reconstituted orange juice in the refrigerator and not shaking it up at all, even after you've put the water and the juice itself together, doesn't taste very good. And then when you mix it back up, it may stay in solution, it may not. Next time you go to get it, if you don't shake it back up again, it kind of doesn't taste the same either. Same thing here. So I always recommend that people give a full dose of the vaccine. If you're not in a position to do that, I would not cut it below 1/4. In other words, get 4 uses out of the same bottle. Now, to everything that sounds good to people, cutting it, saving a few dollars, and so on. And I understand the fact that people say, well, you know, I only hatch 30 birds at a time, and there's 1,000 doses in a bottle, and not wanting to be wasteful. The other problem that you run into in the early part of this conversation, I said that the diluent was not just colored water, and that is an integral part of the vaccine. You can't properly vaccinate without having it. So you have to now figure a way to get the diluent out of the diluent bottle into your bottle of vaccine that you've now cut into quarters. Mm-hmm, and you're going to take that and, you know, mix it up without contaminating the diluent.
Now, if you question the chat room, if you just mix it up as it comes to you, mm-hmm, for this $20 bottle for whatever 1,000 doses,
yep,
and you go ahead and vaccinate the, let's just say the 48 birds that you just hatched out,
mm-hmm,
how long will that bottle last if you're hatching another in another 21 days? Put it in the fridge, not refrigerate it. What can you use that for your next hatch 21 days later, or is it best to just discard that and another $20 bottle? And I'm going to comment on something here also that needs to be said here in a minute about,
okay,
vaccination parties. So let's answer that,
okay,
that first one. About how long?
Well, I've already answered that question,
right,
in the beginning of this conversation. We'll go back,
right,
and we'll go back over again. Once you take the wafer and the diluent and mix the two together and reconstitute it from a dried wafer, and everything is now liquid, it is 1 hour. You cannot save it under any circumstances. I don't care where you read it on the internet. I don't care who you talk to. The directions come with that. Say right in it, must be used within 1 hour. So I don't know how more plain, you know, it can be made. That's why people want to cut it, and I understand that. I truly do understand that. Now, for those people who have a diagnosed outbreak of Marex, I never suggest cutting it. Those birds are going to need all the protection they can get. If you want to go and vaccinate everything for the first year or two with full dose and you want to come back later and try to save a buck, see, I don't get it with the saving a buck thing, because I'll tell you, a bird with Marex is a dead bird, as a general rule, okay, most of the time. So why would you put your birds in jeopardy, number one? Number two, and I've said this before on the show, dead birds don't pay bills, and they don't. You know, they go get buried, or they go in the trash or wherever you put them, and, you know, the whole thing is useless, your money, your time, your effort, and for lots of reasons, okay, they usually take out your best birds first. That's because your best birds are generally under the most stress within a flock. And that's just the way it is. High producers, it doesn't matter whether it's a dog, it doesn't matter whether it's humans, it doesn't matter whether it's horses on a racetrack. We all know that the highest producers, like in those situations, as a general rule, have a tendency sometimes to be sicker at the end of the day than somebody that, you know, goes through life and says, I don't care, you know.
Let me also say this, too, regarding biosecurity here. You're trying to do something to protect your birds and keep them safe, keep them healthy. But I have on several occasions saw a Facebook post or on club sites or things like that where someone has ordered one bottle for $20, 1,000 doses, and they'll say, hey, we're going to have a vaccination party. Bring your birds over here, and we'll vaccinate all of them. I got to do mine anyway, and that type of thing. And here you are, you know, trying to do what you can to vaccinate your birds, keep them safe and healthy, yet you're inviting everybody and all your friends to your farm, to your backyard with their birds to vaccinate theirs as well. So definitely, I guess, Peter, if you're going to do that, vaccinate yours and then have them come by and pick up the bottle and take it to where they're going to vaccinate theirs, so we don't have all these birds coming on the property. Try to use some biosecurity practices here so you don't have all these different birds from different places. Who knows what they have or don't have in your backyard having a vaccination party. Using that, of course, you've got an hour, so you know, you vaccinate your chicks and maybe they're close by and they can come and get that that vial of doses and then go back to their place. And then, you know, the issue is, you know, different syringe, we're talking about $20.
Yep. And I understand there are loads and loads and loads of people who just love chickens and have some chickens and possibly, and I know a lot of them. There's a ton of people out there that I've helped out over the years, and continue to do so. You know, that are living on the edge, lost a job, have the chickens, love them, wouldn't give them up. They're like children. In some places, they are children to them, and I understand all of that. So if you're going to do it, if it is a necessity, as little exposure from certainly adult birds or anything like that. Anybody that's been in their coop and then comes, you know, they're all, you know, got chicken dust and everything else on them, that's not good, because the same thing that applies to other vaccines applies to this one. When you give that shot, that bird is not protected. Not right then and there. Not right then and there. It takes at least a week for the immune system to build antibodies to it and get enough circulating antibodies so that it can ward off a challenge. If the challenge is severe enough, and by challenge we mean the virulence of the virus that it will be coming into contact with, and there are many, many different virulent Marek's viruses out there. So, and if you have one around that isn't covered by this particular strain or of the vaccine, or the vaccine is this particular vaccine would be not as effective against the strain that may be in your flock, you're creating a bigger problem. I don't know how you mitigate all of that. You know, I understand where everybody's coming from. I understand dollars and cents more than a lot of people might think. And, you know, it's no different for me here trying to run a business and trying to glean a profit out of it somewhere along the line so I can get a paycheck. You know, it's about what it boils down to. And
you know, if you most major hatcheries, when you order your birds, you have that opportunity at that point if you're ordering, and they offer that service to get the Marek's vaccination. I mean, it used to be 25 cents a bird or 15 cents a bird, and or somewhere in that area. It's not depending on how many birds you're getting. So you know, if it's something where, oh, I got them, and I don't know if they're vaccinated or not, or, oh, you know, I didn't, but now I think I want to, and so I have to order this for $20, and I guess I could have got my birds vaccinated for 15 cents a piece when I ordered them, but I didn't think about it, or the website said I didn't need to since they were a backyard flock. So just also to let people know that when you're ordering this spring, if you're a new chicken advocate, new chicken lover, and you're ordering from whatever hatchery, you a lot of times when you're ordering online, you have that drop down box of the what you know different things you can choose to vaccinate for, and a lot of times it's less than a quarter per bird to do that. So just wanted to offer that to them. It's not that you're going to have to do this if you order online. You could have them do it before they ship them.
Yeah, I want to say something else, too, while we're on this whole subject of vaccination, the one-day-of-age rule. It's arbitrary, and by that I mean that it doesn't matter if the bird is 14 years old or 1 day old or 1 hour old as far as can I vaccinate it or can I not vaccinate it, you see. The issue is, has the bird been exposed to the virus already? When a manufacturer produces a vaccine, it doesn't matter whether it's Marek's, it doesn't matter whether it's LT, they must, under law, provide the directions for use. It has to be a clear, understandable scenario of how the vaccine is mixed and then how the vaccine is applied. Now, when this vaccine was developed and continues to be to evolve into other types of Merrick's vaccines, the commercial poultry industry was who it was developed for. It wasn't developed for the backyard flock owner, and it wasn't developed for the fancy or any of that. Okay, we've just been able to get our hands on it and use it. So the most opportune time, the cheapest time, the best time for a commercial entity to vaccinate their birds is right there in a hatchery when you got 106 of them in a box and you've got somebody standing there with a syringe and a needle, or after the syringe and needle by hand, it came along with the electric and air-operated vaccinating machines because they were putting them out in, you know, dirty chicken houses. And, you know, they wanted to get this vaccine into them at day of age so that, you know, they would build some immunity, hopefully, before they were exposed. And it works. And it works very well. Now, the majority of hatcheries, I doubt that it's happening with Murray McMurray. I can't really speak for them. I shouldn't even say that, but I doubt it that they are using what we call in ovo technique, which is vaccinating them around 18 days or so when they transfer them. They have a machine that comes down over the top of each egg in the transfer tray and pokes a hole in the top, shoots the vaccine into the allantoic membrane, puts a little wax seal over the top. The people transfer them out of that into the hatching tray, and they go on. And that's how it's being done pretty much all over the world now. And so it's evolved to that. The idea is the vaccine now has about a three-day head start. Okay, it's not one day of age anymore. It's 3 days prior. So it has a huge impact on the what we call condemnations, which would be birds going into the processing plant that an inspector would be looking at and would say, oh, that's got a spot on the liver, so the liver comes out, it's not edible. That's got a spot on the leg, cut the leg off of it, it's not worth it. It goes in the barrel. All of those kinds of things. So that's what it's all about, and that's why they're one day of age. If you've got chicks and you want, let's say you're hatching every week and you only hatch 50 birds every week, if you want to save all of those birds up until you've got three or four batches of them and vaccinate them all at one time, no big deal, not at all. What I would do is I would limit the exposure of those birds to adult birds, and that includes you going out into the adult bird pen, handling birds, and coming back into, let's say, your basement or wherever you're keeping these birds until you can vaccinate them, okay, and handling them and so forth. Because the way this virus is spread is through the feather follicle. And when a bird that is infected with the virus starts flapping its wings, all that dander you see in the air is just loaded with the virus. It gets in your nose, it gets in your ears, it gets in your eyes, it's in your hair, it's on your clothes, it's on your shoes. And then you go in and you pick up a chick that is vulnerable because it's never been vaccinated, and you handle it, or you change the water, change the feed, and you leave some behind of this dander. Therein lies the problem. So, yeah, if you want to vaccinate them 2-3 weeks later, it's not a big deal. It really isn't. It all is all about exposure. If I were going to do that, I would not split the vaccine. I would give a full dose of the vaccine. Now, let me say this. Are there people who are splitting the vaccine and being successful? Yes. And I go back and I say, you know, you've been crossing the street in front of the bus and thumbing your nose at the bus driver for 10 years. Until there was a little rise in the pavement there that you didn't see this day, and you tripped and fell over it, and the bus ran you over. Because things happen. And,
right.
You know, it's just the way it is. But this is a very, what we call a prolific virus, spreads very easily, and is a problem in that respect. If you're going to do it, I would not cut the vaccine, in my opinion. I would... you know, and like I said, I do understand the dynamics of it. I understand the money, the dollar cents thing. I understand all of that. But that's what I would definitely do as far as the vaccination is concerned. And, you know, it also makes a difference how the vaccine is handled during shipment, okay? There is no point in spending your hard-earned money for a bottle of vaccine and then getting it and not having it be useful. And we take that very seriously here. We have a program. We use several different sized containers to ship our vaccines in. The one we use in the summer is 17 inches tall, and the walls of it are 2 inches thick. It's about the biggest you can get without getting crazy. And that thing will go out of here weighing over 10 pounds. And you have to have, and you know, in the summertime, you have to have enough ice packs and stuff. You just can't do it with these small containers that a lot of other people are using. You just can't do it. We've tested it. We've left them outside even without shipping and without anything in it, but ice packs, and go back and 2 or 3 days later, and it's just as hot in the thing as it is outside. So you've got to, you know, and we've gone to different types of ice packs. The smaller the ice pack, the quicker it defrosts. So you go with the biggest ones you can, you know, you can get within reason, and we use a combination of those things to get the what we call the fill in the container. So it does make a big difference. And then the when we put the lid on, the lid is pulled down with tape on every side, okay? And then after the tape is put on, a strip of clear tape is put on with 2 rounds of duct tape around that seam, because the seam is where it's going to be very, very vulnerable. And we're looking at some other things now of putting it inside of a special bag to try to keep the cold in, anything that escapes. So it's important that the vaccine be viable when you get it. If it isn't, what's the point? And all of that costs money. And that's one of the big rubs I get from people all the time, the cost of the container and stuff. I can't help that. So, you know, I have no problem with people who don't want to pay that kind of money for the container, go buy your vaccine somewhere else. And, you know, we try to do it right. And you know, vaccine failure is a big deal. It's a big deal in the commercial poultry industry, so much so that they've gone to those that are still injecting in the neck with a automatic vaccinating machine. They've actually gone to putting a dye into the vaccine so that you can see it on the bird's neck, and they have inspectors that go around, and they'll they use a device called the chick go-around. The chicks come out of the chick pulling room, and they go on this table. It goes round and round and round, and the women and whoever they're vaccinating will pick them up and put them on the automatic vaccinator and vaccinate them, drop them into a box. And the machine even counts them. A little buzzer goes off when they got 106 or whatever they're putting in the box. And somebody will pull some of the chicks from each of these workstations so that they can look and see if the dye is on the neck or is it under the skin. Big difference. You know, so if you're not doing it properly, you know, it makes a big difference to whether the vaccine is going to be viable or not, whether you're going to get any protection for the bird. So it is an issue, and it exists in the commercial poultry industry as well. Even the new in-ovo stuff, if you're not doing it right, you get a lot of embryo mortality. You get contamination of the eggs if it isn't done right. The vaccine isn't mixed right, isn't changed when it needs to be changed. All of those issues apply all the way around. So, you know, it's one of the things you have to be aware of when you're vaccinating. Now, as far as, Andy, did you want to take a break? I didn't know if you needed
to. Yeah, it's fine. It's 1 o'clock straight up. We can actually do that before we get in and continue. Thank you very much for monitoring that clock. Folks, we are talking all about Merrick's disease with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, I believe he has the vaccine in his store, FirstStateVetSupply.com. That's FirstStateVetSupply.com. We'll talk more about Merrick's disease with Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, when we return after this short break. Stay with us, folks.
When you need an incubator, think Brensie, the incubation specialist. Brenzi has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brenzi.com. Brenzi spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brenzi.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brenzi. Technology you can trust. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today. Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And, of course, we've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. And we'll continue our topic today, which is Merrick's disease. Peter, welcome back.
Yeah. Just a couple of things here in relation to what we've already been talking about here. This virus is easily disinfected against. Okay, it's something that you can keep down, but it is always going to be around if you have it. It's not something that I believe that you're going to be able to vaccinate for a couple of years and then get away from from vaccination as far as that's concerned. The other thing I want to talk about is breeding for resistance. It's doable with this or any other disease. The problems generally that come in with this are how do you know that you have achieved your goal if you never have birds that are exposed to the disease. Usually a poultry breeding company that is interested in breeding for resistance to a particular disease We'll have a laboratory set up where they can take this genetic match that they've made and then challenge it with a virulent form of the disease that they're trying to get some protection against and see if the bird holds. I don't think that that you can say, well, I breed for resistance, and that have, because I've never had the disease, therefore I've accomplished my goal. I don't think that's a viable alternative to a program like that. I just don't know how you would know if you had Merrick's disease in your flock, and you were then on a breeding program that you felt was going to lead you to birds that would be resistant to Merrick's. There may be somewhat. I'm not sure even then that you would have, totally accomplished your goal. And again, one of the reasons for that is that, when you don't know. You don't know the kind of challenge you had before. If you had a diagnosed case of Merrick's, I would say that you would probably be closer to it. But again, we go with, look at the virulence of a disease in relation to what you're trying to accomplish. And therein lies the overall problem. The other thing I want to talk about is the Merrick's vaccine itself does not protect against what has been called over the years gray eye. This is the graying, if you will, of the iris of the eye. It looks ugly. I've got a person that has emailed me a picture of a bird. I haven't responded yet, but I probably will do so later tonight. But it looks to me like a clear case of ocular Merrick's. And it left unchecked, which there's nothing you really can do about it, it starts to consume the iris. I've seen it in all different forms, where maybe not forms, but in all degrees of the spread of the virus within the eye, and hers looked pretty nasty. And all you have to do is look at it, see it once, and know what it is, and then you'll be able to recognize it the next time around when you do see it. Nothing you can do for it. I would, my way of thinking, this is one of the times when I probably would euthanize a bird. Again, these viruses spread very, very easily from one bird to another, and I wouldn't want to risk the rest of the flock, not when I knew what it was. It's different if you didn't know what it was, and there's nothing you're going to do to bring that eye back. Usually it's only one eye. I have never seen it in both eyes, and I don't even know why that is. And I don't think anybody else is going to be able to really give us a whole lot of answers on that when it comes to that. But this disease is very prolific, goes everywhere. Vaccination is simple. The vaccine will come with directions, but I'll just run through it. Once you've reconstituted this into a liquid, it is 2/10 of a cc. That's tenths. So with 1 cc of this, you can do 5 birds. And with the 200 ml bottle that comes with it, that'll allow you to do 1,000 birds. And most people don't have 1,000. And we understand that. But it used to come in a 500 years ago. But not that many people are using this vaccine anymore. It may seem like it. To everybody, when it's been on back order like it was a month or two ago, and you couldn't get a bottle of it. But that has more to do with the ability of the company that makes it to grow it, and it also has plant space, time in the plant to make it. In other words, they may be able to grow it, and then they store it, and then they wait until they have plant time to put it in bottles and everything else. So that does happen as well, and it could have been part of the thing here. Plus, when they buy out all these other companies and stuff, they let a lot of people go, and it isn't always the best people that they keep, trust me. It all boils down to dollars and cents. Who's making the most money? Who's costing us the most money with their health care and everything else? And so a lot of these people, you know, that there are some of these vaccines are very difficult to grow, very difficult, and even over the years. So, you know, all of that could be part of the reason, rhyme and reason, you know, why it was in short supply earlier, even earlier this year. But we've got plenty of it here. Like I said, we'll come with directions. If a person wants the directions on how to split it, all they got to do is ask for them. You know, we'll make sure that they get those directions. It's free. It's not going to cost anything as far as that's concerned. One of the ways of determining whether or not you have Merrick's in your flock, the ocular form, it's pretty easy. You'll see the graying out of the iris, and this gray tumor material will just take over the basically the entire eye. So that one's not hard to see. But generally, this starts out in the flock in a number of different ways. We call it a presentation. How is it presenting itself? One of the ways that it presents itself is lameness. We start seeing birds that are either dropping one wing. Usually it's not both wings at the same time. So in that particular case, you would have to make a judgment as to whether or not you were looking at a case of coccidiosis versus Merrick's. Coccidiosis, generally roughed up feathers, lethargic, standing around, drooping their wings, that kind of thing. Whereas when we usually see it with Merrick's disease, we usually will end up seeing one wing first. Is it possible and does it happen that both wings will droop? Yes, that's why I'm saying you have to make a distinction between these things. One of the other presentations that it has is the legs become basically useless. It may start out with a bird that starts to get a leg that's a little draggy, meaning that it can stand on it, but when it walks, it limps, and then it kind of drags the foot a little bit. Another presentation is when they totally go down altogether and they can't stand. These are classic Merrick's symptoms that have been seen over the years over and over and over. And this would be the presentation of sitting on the breast, one leg in front of it and one leg out to the back and a little bit to the side. And but that is classic Merrick's. The other is laying on the side with both legs straight out. It's a funny thing, and not funny, but these birds can, in most cases, move the leg, but they can't stand on it and walk on it and pick it up and move it in that fashion. And it eventually gets bad enough that the paralysis of the legs is so bad they can't move. And one of the other tip-offs to it is, besides this, if you haven't figured it out by this point, usually if they are on their breast, they'll try to scoot around on their wings, and the wingtips get pretty well beat up with it. Part of this is caused by tumor involvement with what we call the vagus nerve. This can cause problems with breathing, and all of the peripheral nerves can be infiltrated with tumors in the skin, the muscles, and the visceral organs. All of these things can be affected by the Merrick's virus, and those would be things that we would call the classical symptoms of the disease. A lot of the other things that we don't see, there is such a thing as acute Merrick's, and they seem to be problems that exist in other countries where some of the Merrick's viruses seem to be a little bit more lethal than they are here. As a general rule, we do not see birds here generally die directly from the Merrick's virus. They usually become starve-outs and pick-outs within a flock. Once the other birds realize that this bird is no longer a viable bird, they will pick on it anywhere and everywhere, and usually do if you don't take it out of there. Starvation is another thing. Can't get the food and water, so just kind of lay around, get stepped on and crapped on by the rest of the birds and what have you, and that's just the way it is. So as a keeper of poultry, it would be to your benefit to take the bird, and once you have made your decision as to whether it's Merrick's or not, it would be wise, and I've been doing a show a fair amount of time, and everybody knows I don't talk about putting birds down as a general rule, but this is one time when I would pretty much say that once they get to that point, there is no turning back as far as that's concerned. As far as a bird that you suspect having Merrick's that is not crippled but starting to show some symptoms and that kind of thing, there is no reason why you couldn't start them out with a Bayer brand baby aspirin 3 to 4 times a day orally. We have had some success with giving the turmeric. And you can go down to the health food store and you can get the if you're going to do it, I want you to get the turmeric that is potentiated, and that means it has in it a product called bioperine, and that is an extract of the black peppercorn, and we know that from the tons of research that's been done on humans as well, that it helps the turmeric absorb through the intestinal wall. And I would get something up in a 900 milligram range.
Mm-hmm.
And I would give, easily 4 of them a day. Doesn't matter what size the bird is. It's not going to be an issue of being toxic. It's going to be an issue of trying to get enough of it into them to make a difference.
Critter Lover in the chat room asks, is there any way, let's say you've had a confirmed safe case of Merrick's, you lost your entire flock or you ended up having to deal with them and send them to the poultry lab, whatever, they were all put down. Is there a time you should wait before you get new ones? Obviously, the new ones, I'm guessing, should be vaccinated. And is there a way to get rid of the Merrick's in the soil, in the bedding, in your coop, if we're cleaning it with oxine that you carry, what have you? I guess that's a lot of information, but her question is there a way to get rid of it in our run, bedding, coop, that type of thing? Because we always hear about it being airborne, dander, going from one farm to the other, and air, but I guess that dander eventually settles in coop and run, so what could we do if that was our situation?
I will say it in this form. There wouldn't be any guarantee, but this is what I would do if this were something that I had to deal with personally, and that is I would use oxine, and I would wash every inch of that coop, every
mm-hmm.
inch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care where it is. That's why when I designed this coop that that we have here, I decided that no electrical stuff goes in the wall, so we don't have leakage of water down behind the walls. All the seams everywhere, the ceiling, the floor is all sealed twice with caulking compound.
And folks, it is all stainless steel. The entire coop is beautiful. It looks like an Airstream on wheel. It's amazing. Air conditioner, heater, electrical conduit. Man, it's got just like those automatic toilets in New York. He gets his chickens outside. He closes the door and pushes a button, and you hear this, and it just sanitizes the whole coop. I mean, this is the bomb coop, Peter Brown.
Well, I figured if I'm going to do it right, I don't want to do it over again.
I heard that.
I put all of the electrical is in plastic conduit, and all of the electrical boxes are covered so that you have to open a cover and reach in and turn the switch or whatever it be. So I would wash everything down from top to bottom. If you've got 2x4s nailed to the wall, I'd pull them off and discard them and start over with them and wash everything else down. Wash every feeder, every waterer that you've got. As far as the soil is concerned, the only thing you're going to be able to do there, I might spray the top of it with oxine just to try to kill off anything that's there. It will not work its way into the soil and do anything as far as that's concerned, but we're talking about surface contamination. And then I would take hydrated lime. and I would lime the nonsense out of every inch of the property, the run, where birds have walked, been, or anything else. That's going to be the issue, that one feather that gets left behind. It just has enough, you know, it's almost unprecedented to do something like this. But I don't think the cost is that great. It's time. It's labor. Could it be done? I think it could be done. I think that what I would do, any birds that I was going, after we clean this all up, we do the hydrated lime thing, we work it into the soil, I would let the place stay dormant for 90 days. I might even go back in and re-lime that soil a second time, okay? You've got to let that work itself into the soil so that the birds can't stand on it because it can burn their feet. But it is a good way of doing things that way. It does, it will kill off earthworms and that kind of stuff, so, you know, as far as that being any kind of problem. But I would do all of this, and I would let the place stay dormant for 90 days. I know that's a long time, but I would do that much. And then before I put anybody back in, I would fog the place, the coop itself, with oxine. I would make sure all my birds were vaccinated for Merix. If I was wanting to do it myself, I would probably vaccinate them off the premise. And I would make sure that I gave a full dose to each one, and I would let them be off the farm for 14 days before I brought them in, and then I would bring them in and see where you go. I think you would have a pretty good chance of doing it that way. That's how I would do it, I would be very careful from that point forward what I brought in, what I did. The 30-day rule, as far as I'm concerned, isn't long enough for bringing birds in. Now, some of these birds have so many issues, and 2 weeks is definitely not enough. Definitely not enough.
The question that was just posted on our Facebook page, we're talking 11 minutes ago. Gerald's listening, can't get in the chat room, so he posted on our Facebook group. Thank you very much, Jared. Is the Merix disease passed down or can be transferred to the egg from the parent?
No, there's no vertical transmission. No.
Okay.
No, none at all. No. There aren't too many diseases that do that because they usually end up killing the bird or the embryo. And no, it does not. And while I'm speaking here, I did.
Sure.
I'm thinking, running stuff through my brain here. While Dr. Merrick gets his name put on the vaccine as the one of the initial investigators, and I don't know this other individual, but I do know of him, but I don't know him personally. Didn't know Dr. Merrick either, so I don't want to pretend that either. But Dr. Ben Roy Burmester was the individual who was credited with putting this vaccine together back in the 60s, 70s. So just so that we throw that out there for whatever it's worth.
Wait,
to anybody.
You didn't know them?
No, but I knew a few others that were involved. One of the greatest poultry veterinarians that, from my perspective, who ever walked the face of the earth was Dr. Hiram Lasher. And I haven't seen Hiram in quite some years. I'm not even sure if he's still alive, but. He is responsible for many, many of the poultry vaccines. He was a Wheeler dealer. He started. He was the one that was actually brought in to start Intervet. Intervet wouldn't exist if it were not for him. And I mean, they probably would have gone on to somebody else, but he's the one that got them up and running because every time you make a vaccine has to go through the Department of Agriculture and be. And possibly, depending on what kind of vaccine it is, maybe these days some of the FDA. Most of the vaccine companies try to stay away from FDA because it's a tough road to hoe. But, he had a pipeline directly into the USDA, and they knew him. They knew his credentials, and they knew, for the most part, that he brought something in there that, it was needed and it was viable and so on. And involved in Sterwin Laboratories, which was one of the initial vaccine companies here as well. And after he left Intervet, he was had a poultry consulting company over in Millsboro, Delaware, and consulted with people all around the world with their chickens and viruses and stuff. Well, probably one of the smartest people that I've ever met in my life, and Hiram was good at getting information from you that you didn't want to give up. Probably could have used him in some of our wars as an interrogator. He would be able to ask you enough questions to know, so when you went in to see him, if you were holding some information that the company you might be working for didn't want anybody to know, you were probably best not to even go there. Because he would ask enough questions to surmise where you were on that particular subject, and very, very astute individual, very astute. But, yeah, some of these guys, some have passed on from this world, but a couple of people that are out there. One of these days I'll do a little bit of thing. I'll go through a few of the people.
There's a question in the chat room here from Connie. I'm going to try to make sense out of it here. I believe she's asking if you did vaccinate for Marex and one out of 20 of your chickens got ocular Marex, what should you do for the rest of the flock? Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, there's nothing it can do for the rest of the flock. There's no cure for it, so I would take the one bird and put it down, bury or burn the carcass so that no other bird can dig it up, eat it, or fool with it. I would probably go ahead and do some basic disinfection within the coop itself with some oxine or something like that, and just keep an eye out. But we don't see the ocular one as much as we see the other ones that cause the nerve damage and the tumors on the nerves, the vagus nerve, and so on. I've often described it to you folks who have never seen it. It is what I call the junction box. It is in the in between both kidneys of the bird and the nerves from the head and the neck, and so it runs straight down through the spinal column. And when you get into the lower end of the body cavity, in between the kidneys. In between the legs, that's where the nerves will go out to the legs and the wings and so on. And it's within that, it's called the brachial plexus, and that's where that vagus nerve and stuff run. And you'll see the enlargement of that. Andy, way back when we first got started, I did a video seminar for a group of your meetup group. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and I held the picture up. I blew up the picture of it and showed them what the difference was between the two. That was kind of neat. But it gives everybody a better perspective. Because when we talk about tumors, everybody thinks these golf ball-sized, grapefruit-sized tumors. And while they can and do occur, they are more rare and not generally caused directly by the Marex virus that we're talking about. It is in the same thing. We talk about the leucosis complex, then it's a totally different virus. That causes the leucosis virus causes lymphoid leucosis, which is we term it as big liver disease, and causes the liver to grow out of control. You'll know that when you see it. When you open up a bird, its liver from head to toe, side to side, front to back. It's got the liver, size of a liver for five birds in it, let alone one. But we see that lots of times, and that's another virus, different deal, no prevention. That's another one. Obviously, once you find it, generally that is something that's passed on from the parents, and you find out who they are, and you usually eliminate them. But that's a whole other story. But
I was just going to ask, as we kind of wrap up, if you'll do us a favor and explain to us the advantage, because it is a fabulous product both for cleaning and treating your birds, and in certain cases you talked about it using a nostril flush and things like that. Mm-hmm. with oxine, and why it we know it's more expensive, but it's an awesome product. Why it over, because whenever we talk about cleaning the coop or cleaning the run, or and people in this chat room, they've listened to you for years, oh, oxine this, oxine that, I've got a bottle of oxine and all this, use oxine, and people say bleach with question mark, what about bleach? Mm-hmm. And so if you could give us that answer of why
sure.
Oxine over just bleach from the grocery store.
Sure. It's actually quite simple. While oxine is a derivative of bleach, it would make some sense on the surface to look at bleach and say, well, what's the difference? Well, chemically, I don't know what the difference is. I'm not a chemist, and I've never looked beyond the fact, that this product works and works well. But I'll say this: oxine. This much I do know: oxine is 200 times more powerful than bleach. So then I'll ask the question: which one do you want to use?
Mm-hmm.
You say, when they back in when we had the anthrax scare in this country, okay. They in the Hart Senate Office Building in Washington, D.C., they used oxine in its gaseous form to clean it up. They didn't go down to the local supermarket and get bleach. Okay? They went with what was tried and true and what scientifically they knew would work and do the job. And and also, the other part of it is considered organic, and it has an organic sticker on the bottle or whatever. It is, like I said, 200 times more powerful than bleach, and it is extremely versatile. I don't know what you couldn't use it for. You know, we've just, and some of the things that it's been used for are things that I've developed here because of my observance of how good it does. For instance, how did I come up with the idea of nasal flushing with this stuff? Well, I observed some ducks that were ill that had what we call sticky eye. You get a sticky film grows over the eye. It's an eye infection, basically, because they're always digging around in dirt and what have you. And I just said, well, put some oxine in the water for now and see what happens. And lo and behold, within 24 hours of giving them clean water, not letting them have access to the dirt at this point in time, but having clean water from just dipping their heads in and out of the bucket of clean water with oxine in it, it went away. And I said, well, how about this? So we started fooling around with it, and nasal flushing has been around a long time. I don't want to seem like I'm the guy that invented it. That's not what I'm saying. But nasal flushing with oxine was, to my knowledge, was my idea. It's been done with antibiotics for a millennium. And I still have, people doing the nasal flushing. There are people who listen to this show, and one I'm sure is listening today, and I'm not going to mention the name because it's none of anybody else's business who that person is, but I know that they know that the use of antibiotics for nasal flushing and oxy and everything else works because they do it. And I would never put it out here if I didn't believe that it worked. But we know that. So the difference between oxine and bleach is oxine doesn't leave the slimy feeling that the bleach leaves, and it doesn't, while it smells a little bit like bleach, it's not near as a strong smelling. And it is labeled for use in birds' drinking water. That's not an off-label use. Okay, it is labeled for use in a fogging machine with the birds present over the top of the birds. Okay, it has many uses. I don't know anything you couldn't use it for. And it doesn't build antibiotic resistance. That's the other part of it. It doesn't build not antibiotic resistance, but doesn't build resistance to any organism. So, I mean, anything that it comes in contact with in the right concentration, it's going to take care of it for you. So, things are expensive, and that's all relevant.
Exactly.
You can get good, clean, quality oats down at the store, all right, and you'll pay a price for them. If you want them after they come through the horse, they come a lot cheaper. And that's just the way I look at it. I don't argue about prices on things. You get things from us that you don't get from other people. Other people have copied a lot of the things that we do, direction-wise and everything else. That's just the way it is. But I did not invent nasal flushing, no, and I would never say that. But, we know that this product works, and that's why, it's on my top 10 list of things in my career that have come along that I think have changed things. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I believe in it. I don't own the company. I don't have any stock in the company. Matter of fact, I have issues with the company. Okay.
Yeah. I know.
Andy,
I know.
Andy is privy to that. I sent him the cease and desist. Yep. Got my booby in another ringer again. That's okay. You know, it's you know, like I said, you argue when you're on solid ground. When you're, you know, you got one foot in a banana peel and the other in a grave, not a good time to argue. But, you know, we complied. We're okay. And we're still selling the product. But, you know, it's just the way it is. But, no, it's a tremendous product. And, I like I said, I would never recommend a product to anybody knowing that it didn't work. I don't do that. And I really investigate a lot of, you know, spend a lot of time with these things, you know, trying to figure out. Just like, who else do you know with this cone compound that I've got that is trying to get data to suggest whether there is any validity to the fact of whether it'll keep a comb from freezing. Nobody's doing it. The manufacturer, I've talked to the manufacturer, they've done some, and I've gotten their information. I'm happy with it, but I want to see for myself. So we've got a few folks trying it. We'll see what we get out of it. And when I get enough information to put it out there for everybody, I'll tell you. But, you know, I don't want to be selling something that's bogus, and I don't believe it is bogus. I just want to know for myself, and I'm going to try. Just like when we were talking about egg laying issues, behavioral issues, and everything else, and Rob was kind enough to take on that project for us up there in Massachusetts. Really did a great job when you come right down to it. Got a lot of good information from that, solid information. We know that the stuff works. We know what it'll do, and that's what we want. I won't be out here selling something that somebody says, yeah, all I'm trying to do is make money, because I'll tell you, that ain't what it's about. Not by a long stretch. And so it is a good product, and I like it. I sell it. I have all the directions for it. Not a problem. And we just know it works. It is an awesome product.
There was a post in the chat room, Ioxine everything.
Yep.
It said, the jug is expensive, but it lasts forever, and Doc is the cheapest source around for it. There in the chat room, somebody, one of your customers.
Yeah, we try to do it. We try to do a good job. We know that the bottles are bogus bottles. The bottles are not good bottles, and we've been fighting that battle for years, and that's the only bottle you're going to get from them, and that's it. And when I ship it, it requires me, I say requires me, it's my own thinking on it, you know, I put it in a much larger box than you would normally put it in, because that bottle cannot take a whole lot of impact. Just can't. And we put heavy-duty bubble wrap on the bottom that keeps it up at least an inch off the bottom of the box. And if it's going by itself, it gets put in what we call a 14-cube box, 14 inches all the way around. And you put it right in the middle, and you put the other stuff on the bottom to keep it off the bottom, and then you fill it up with chips real tight. And we shake everything down here, so because if you don't, it'll wobble around in the box. And I'll tell you, I've had them come back busted. Big plastic bag.
Yep.
More times than you can shake a stick at. And you don't get reimbursed for it either. You got to eat it all. Not only the cost of shipping, which is ridiculous, but you've got to eat the bottle of stuff. So just the way it is. And, you know, we recognize that, and that's why we do some of the things that we do here, so that hopefully you'll get the product that you wanted in good shape. And but no, I would recommend it to anybody. We use it here. There's a number of things you can use it for. It works good for humans. Soak your feet in if you've got toenail fungus. Better than taking any medicine you'll find, okay, that's going to eat your liver or some other damn thing. So, but no, it works. It's a really good product, and it's very powerful. That's the other issue. You know, that's the first thing that would make me steer away from bleach. Bleach is cheap. There isn't any question about it. There isn't any question about it. But it does not have the killing power that Ioxine has, not by a long shot. And it does not have the track record that this product has. Okay? This product is EPA approved to put in the drinking water, EPA approved to be sprayed over the top of the birds' heads. Okay? And I emphasize the EPA. You know what that's all about, Andy.
Yep. Oh, my goodness. Boy, do I. So, anyway. Hey, It's awesome. Hey, thanks for joining us. It was an awesome show, folks. We also covered Merrick's probably several months ago in the last year, and again, it's probably equally an almost a two-hour show about Merrick's. But so we've got a couple that we've done now, but like Doc said, he wanted to do one based on we're entering our busy season. Chick Day's event starts. Are started really the 1st of February, and they go through probably mid-May. And so this is just crazy chick season. So it is what it is. So we're glad you could tune in today. We hope you can tune in every Monday with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Just like we say, Monday through Thursday here on the show is about learning, educating ourselves about our great flocks and our lifestyle, homesteading, self-sufficiency, gardening, chickens, the whole nine yards. Fridays, when we do Friday shows, laid back, giving away prizes, things like that. So gotta love that. So again, every Monday, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, joins us with great information. So Peter, thank you very much for joining us today, as you do every Monday. And
my pleasure.
I believe, and also let me think, we're set. I think next Monday I will be in Crestview, I think, Florida. But I think we're going to be good for the show next week, even though I'll be on the road. I think we will be good next Monday, no problems for a show. I was looking at the calendar and the times last night, so we'll see you again next Monday, 12 p.m.
I will be here. I appreciate it.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you for joining us. Well, and that's going to wrap up another great show here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our special guest today, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, First State vetsupply.com. If they don't carry it, you don't need it. Again, www.firststatevetsupply.com, where you can, of course, get the oxine we were talking about today, the Merrick's vaccination we talked about today, and countless other items that you probably need to keep on hand. They got a great emergency medicine kit that he has that you can keep on hand when you first see those birds having some health issues. You'll have it right there to actually use. And it'll get you through until you can order more if you need more. So he's got the emergency medicine kit there. And, of course, pinless peepers if you have those birds that are picking and pecking and pulling out the feathers, and, you've got two or three problem birds that are just meanies, pinless peepers you can find also at firststatevetsupply.com. Put those on a non-invasive, not painful, they can still look down, they can still scratch, still look for predators, they just can't pinpoint, no pun intended, that those feathers and pick them out. So pinless peepers that we talk about all the time here on the radio show, if you've got those unruly birds that like to pick and peck. So I'll find that there at firststatevetsupply.com. So again, thank you very much for tuning in, and again, hope you can tune in all this week here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Same time, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't forget to enter the Chicken Coop Contest that we've got going on. Become a fan on Facebook, facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer. Oh, and one last thing, because many people have asked, we now have T-shirts back in stock. They have been on, not really on back order, they've been out of stock for quite some time now, and we had tons and tons of orders that we refunded right before Christmas. We apologize for that, but we do have the famous, very popular Chicken Whisperer T-shirts back in stock now at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. And for the first time ever, we've been carrying T-shirts now for several years, and we've always had people asking, what about youth sizes? So let me tell you right now, first time ever, we have never carried youth size shirts before. We have them in stock now. We've got youth extra small, youth small, youth medium, and youth large, on our website. Prices that you see include shipping. Okay, so keep that in mind when you see the price. I think the youth is about $12.50. I think the adult shirts are $17.50, but that includes shipping to your front door. And so that includes shipping. When you keep that in mind when you look at that, there won't be any shipping or tax or anything like that added when you go to buy your T-shirt. So we also got the Chicken Whisperer bumper stickers that are very popular as well. People love them. Power to the Poultry bumper stickers. But I just want to mainly let you know that we do have the youth sizes now available. It is the Chicken Whisperer logo, huge round logo on the front of the shirt. Below it, it says Power to the Poultry. Both the adult and the youth style shirts are like that. So if you've been one of the ones asking about, hey, what about you? I want to get some for my grandkids or my kids or youth sizes, instead of just getting adult small and it swallowing them up or using it as a nightshirt, we do now have specific youth sizes due to your request. So very proud of that. That's chickenwhisperer.com. Click on the Chicken Whisperer store and you can go right there and purchase those if you've been wanting to. So alrighty, we will see you tomorrow here, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. Hope you have a wonderful and fabulous day. Oh.